Time to take a look at your personal computer. Larry Mueller here with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Question? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us. And the email address is talk@wpr.org. Pete, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Always great, Larry.
We've got a worm issue out there, haven't we?
Yeah. I support a number of systems, and there is this one called System Security, and it's at version 4.52. And it's these, you know, I just have no place in my heart for the people that do these at all.
No.
There's not even an inkling of compassion for them in terms, and the people around me know how I feel about punishment on that. But what happens is once this thing gets into your system, and even the ways to get rid of it on your system that are posted on the web and internet actually don't work, is it gets in on your system and it comes up and it says, we've done a system scan of your computer and you have this many problems, and in order to fix it, you need to buy me. And even if you buy it, from what I read, you know, good, too bad. And I think they want like $79.95 or something. You reboot your computer, and this is a Windows system, of course, not Apple yet. But, you know, I'm sure someone out there is diabolically working on trying to figure out how to transport over to Apple. You reboot your system, and you want to go in, like, safe mode. And we've talked about going into safe mode, and it disables some of the multitasking functions of Windows so you can gain access to things. And so you think you can get into safe mode, and it reboots. And the only mode you can get into is the desktop mode, which shows you the scan. Now, someone would say, well, why don't you do Control-Alt-Delete and kill the process? It disables Control-Alt-Delete, disables System Restore. It disables the ability. I think I had the slight ability to actually browse the web. But any virus scan you try to do, it protects itself. I tried to do this particular system actually had a drive share enabled on it. So I tried to scan it from the network, and it protected itself so that none of the areas that needed to be scanned could actually be scanned. So you're saying, how do you deal with this? Well, one is, you know, just simply redo the drive. You lose everything off of it. The other one is to try and disinfect it. Well, I took it out, put in another system, and did multiple scans on it, and of course, you know, it detected it, and it ridded itself, you know, got rid of it. And then I put it back in and was able to resuscitate the system. I don't really like to have to redo Windows because you have to reinstall everything, and
it's a pain.
It's a lot of work, but in this case, this is a lot of work to try and bring the system back. So how do these things get in? Well, they get in through security flaws, like one that you mentioned earlier before we got on the air about Microsoft having an issue. If you see something like this popping up and saying, hey, you know, we're going to scan your computer and it's coming out of the blue, my reaction is actually just shut the system off.
Okay.
You know, not even give it any time where you're killing the process or Control-Alt-Delete. Just flat out, just shut it off, because something's going on, and if these things continue, they mutate, and they infiltrate the system, and it's not pretty. So, and it's
shut it off.
I would just say, just shut it off. The other thing is, was reading, you know, with the Packers starting training camp. I found
the twittering business.
I found it very interesting that any Packer caught, and I wonder if this applies for coaches.
I imagine.
Or any Packer personnel caught twittering, texting, you know, anything to do with the technology during the course of training camp functions. It was like $1,701. I don't know what the significance of it was. What is this, like over $1,700 fine, at least for the first incidents, if you're caught doing that. So the technology has infiltrated sports, and now they're having rules for the social engagement of that. And then one other comment, you know, the prior show, and I don't want to continue the prior show in terms of the discussion, but just my general observations is that I'm over 50. I've got two kids, one in college, one about to be in college. And I can tell you right now, that generation feels entitled.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
If they want something, they get it. They take it. It's out there on the internet. And the book industry, the music industry, and the video industry have some real serious concerns in terms of protecting creativity through, you know, how to fix this digital rights management is what it boils down to. And how to compensate people for their creative work. Because I can tell you right now, if it's a video, it's out there. And it doesn't cost anything if you want it. If it's a book, it's out there. If it's music, it's out there. And those industries are clueless in terms of protecting the creative rights. And, you know, with all the stuff that's going on, this thing keeps marching on. It's got this huge force, this huge underground, and it just keeps going. And the industry experts have not figured it out. And it boils down to digital rights management, who has the rights to what, and how to control that. And until they figure that out, the people that have got the creativity, that write the books, that author the music, that do the videos, do all our creative stuff is not protected. And it's unfortunate. And I don't say that I don't participate in that, but I'm just saying that in order for me to know about it, I have to do it and understand what's going on with it. And I've had my kids say, Dad, someone is getting in on my wireless network and tapping in and downloading, and I can't allow that to happen. You need to help me shut it off. And, you know, when I hear that, I'm like, where does it come from? Well, they live in an apartment. And unless you know how to control access to your network so they can't tap in, you know, people can be driving around doing this war driving thing and tapping into your network and downloading off your connection. I mean, I could go on and on with this, Larry.
Well, I tell you what, it is a big concern, and it's probably going to come up at one point or another during the program with the questions we have. Every one of our lines is filled. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. So let's go to Joe first in Nina. Joe, hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi. Good morning, Peter.
Hi.
A few weeks ago, I switched from a PC to a Mac.
Okay.
And before I did that, I had loaded some email messages on an external hard drive.
Okay.
Out of Outlook. When I hooked my external hard drive to my Mac and attempted to open those email messages, I got a message that these .msg files were not recognized, that they were the wrong file format.
Okay.
Or that the format, or that they might be contaminated. I've run out of experts. I mean, I've called Apple, and I've called the local people that I bought the computer from, and no one seems to know what to do. I've been on the Internet, but I haven't really gotten any firm directions as to what to do.
So
do you have any ideas?
So you're trying to basically export your emails that were on the PC, and you want to be able to read them in the Mac?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I actually have not done that. I mean, I've switched, you know, PCs to a Mac, and I happen to use both of them at work. If you have a lot of messages, there might be some conversion. I'm just throwing some things that I would look at, okay, how I would approach it.
Okay.
Okay, first one is there a message converter? For example, in a different environment, there are music files that are Windows recognized, but MP3 files is what people use. So, or are what people use. But you can convert a Windows music file to an MP3 file. It's not like a given. It has to be gone through a conversion act. So what I'm saying is maybe there's a utility that someone that is at a higher level that switched from a PC to a Mac that said, hey, I've got a lot of email messages in Outlook. I want to get them over to my Mac. I've written this little utility. It's freeware. It's shareware. So search for something like that. The other one is, if it's not a lot of messages, simply email them to maybe set up a new account a new email account and email them to yourself. And then when you're on the Mac, go and pick those messages up. That's another option. Another one is in Outlook to see what kind of export file options you have for exporting those messages. And maybe there might be a kind of a generic, you know, read them all so that you can maybe import those into the Mac because it's not tagged as an Outlook specific. So, for example, Outlook creates a .pst file, and it usually packages everything in that. You might be able to find a different format to export the Outlook emails to. So if it's a lot of emails, try and see if there's some kind of conversion program. I know there are some Microsoft MVPs out there. I would go to mvps.org and then click on the big list. I've got a ton of forums linked off of my virus info page at the top if you look at the forums, and I've also got links to the MVP list. What you do there is look for the ones that are experts in Outlook and, you know, peruse their sites and see if you can find, you know, anything is related to converting to, you know, email for the Mac. See what you can find there.
Okay. You gave a second suggestion, which was to just email them to myself again?
Right, yeah. Just, you know, use your PC and, you know, open up your Outlook and then forward them to another email address, okay, that you would access using your Mac. So maybe a Google email or a Yahoo email.
And you forward them to myself?
And forward them to your new address, and then just open them up on the Mac.
Yeah.
So, you know, or you can, you know, if you have your own domain or if you're using, you know, whoever you're using for your internet service, TDS, Charter, Roadrunner, whoever, they typically give you a certain number of email addresses. You could call them up and say, hey, I want to set up another email and use it on my Mac. So you create a new email address that you're going to use for your Mac and then just forward them to yourself that way.
Sure.
I kept the same email address that I had on my PC.
Right. But I'm just saying that in order to forward those emails that you're trying to, you know, save and get over to the Mac, just forward them to a new email address that you've created that's temporary. That's just for this one-time thing. Unless you decide you want to use it still.
Yeah. There you go, Joe. Thanks very much for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant with us here today. If you have a question, join us at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network. We'll take your questions at 800-642-1234. John in Kenosha next with a question for Peter Green. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. My question is, when I have a Hewlett Packard, when I get downloads from Microsoft or from Windows, you know, and also when I get downloads from AVG Free, you know, when they update,
right?
Do they take out things, you know, to upgrade, you know what I'm saying? If I get a different security upgrade, will they take out the old one? Because my computer's been getting a little bit slower from all that sort of stuff.
Right. Let's see. Have you, you know, we've talked about this in prior shows. Have you done the thing where you've resized your recycle bin?
Mm-mm, no.
Okay. If you right-click on your recycle bin and click on Properties, the default of the operating system is 10% of your hard drive space. So,
all right.
So you can slide that down to 1%. That should, you know, how old's your computer?
Oh, it's probably about 10 years or so.
Oh, yeah.
Which version of Windows are you using?
XP.
Okay. Yeah, that'll help. Same thing, you use System Restore at all?
No, I don't. Well, yeah, I have used it.
Okay. Yeah. If you go into Accessories and then System Tools and then System Restore and click on the System Restore settings, and change the default of 12% of your drive to 1%. That'll help too. And then you also, under system tools, you want to do disk cleanup. And
I've done that quite a bit.
Okay. You may want to change your browser settings so that your history isn't like the default is 20 days. Maybe change that to like 7 or 8 days. That'll help. You may have a ton of cookie files on it. You know, if you haven't deleted those, you may want to clean those up periodically. Although, just to make you aware, when you clean cookie files, if you go to sites where, like online banking or trading or sites that you log into, you'll be asked to log in. It'll just kind of reinitiate its depositing the cookies back on your system. But what happens is when you're browsing the internet a lot, there's a lot of ad cookies that are deposited on your system, and each one of those occupies quite a bit of space over time. What else can you do? If your system's 10 years old, you probably don't have a very large hard drive. So the things that I just told you to do are going to gain you some time. But if you, receive email attachments, so, you know, if you're getting people sending you pictures or anything like that, make sure that your temporary internet files are removed, because all those occupy a lot of space. A lot of space.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Yeah, and then what are you using for email?
Hotmail.
Okay, so, yeah, make sure you do good file management with all that your any attachments, any downloads that you get. Make sure you know where they are, and if you don't need them anymore, get rid of them, because a lot of these zipped files and pictures, if you don't need pictures, videos, audios, all that stuff occupies a lot of space.
Yep. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, John. Appreciate it. Let's go to Jack in Madison next. Jack, hi to you.
Hi. Well, lots of good ideas here. My question comes from my attempt to digitize VHS video and put it on a DVD. I'm using a PC with as much or more power than the specifications for this program and associated hardware required. I'm running XP with Service Pack 3. The hardware in question here is a USB connector that brings together the video and audio into a USB plug. Now, the result of using this should yield an AVI file that I could use with a video editing program to produce the DVD. The current result from using this program is to lose so many frames during the transfer that the result is unusable. It will reproduce the sound and picture for a few seconds, then lose syllables and even the whole word on the soundtrack and give a jerky picture. The program's tech support people recommend that I download an update of the Microsoft DirectX program. I did this with a slight improvement. They also recommended that I go into MS Config and disable the items in the startup and service lists. They recommended some cautionary steps to enable me to restore the system to the way it was afterwards. I hesitate to do this. The tech support recommends that I needed to disable everything that would interfere with the transfer operation. I had already shut down all the other operating programs as shown in the Windows Task Manager. Do you have any suggestions on this?
What they're telling you to do is basically they want to strip down machine when you start up so that all the resources are dedicated to the task that you're trying to do. So if they gave you, adequate instructions on that, I would do that, to try and see if you have success with it. Because the DirectX that they told you to do, that's correct.
That's exactly what it's
written for this kind of function. And it's they've been doing it that way for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I think years ago I talked about DirectX, that they said that you couldn't remove a version from your machine. In other words, you couldn't go backwards after you upgraded. But I actually found someone that created a utility that undid it. because we had, for some reason we had to because it didn't work out well. I feel your pain in terms of what you're trying to accomplish and how frustrating that can be. I could only tell you that probably the system that you're trying to do this on, the better choice would have been to do it on a Mac, because just personal experience in working with
so
a Mac
much better.
For those kind of tasks, it has no memory issues and no processing issues in terms of dealing with video, and you would be using FireWire, which was written specifically for what you're doing, versus USB, which is kind of grown up as a faster transfer of files, but was not written specifically for audio-video tasks, which is what FireWire was written for. With that being said, maybe, just maybe, and I'm surprised that the company that, I don't know what product you're using, didn't talk about maybe using FireWire as an add-on for your computer.
I have a FireWire connection on this PC.
Okay, you're not using it?
They don't provide the connection for the hardware.
Really?
There's right now. There's no way of getting the signal, the analog signal from the VHS playback into the FireWire connection. They do provide that. It's an octopus looking kind of connector that has a place for the super VHS and audio channels and so forth, and brings it into the one plug.
Right. How much memory do you have in your system?
It's 1 gigabyte.
Oh, you need to improve that.
Yeah.
You should, if you go to their websites like Crucial. CRUCIAL.com, PNY.com, Kingston.com. They all have memory, configurators, if you want to call it, or, you know, you put in the model of your computer and it can tell you, you know, what kind of memory you can, you know, purchase to upgrade it. You can also download a program called Belark Advisor.
I have that.
Okay.
And I have slots in there for one more chunk of memory.
Okay. So do you have
put it in.
Do you have a 1 gig strip, or do you have 2 512s, or, you know?
There's 2 512s.
2 512s. Boy, I'd almost be tempted to bump that up to you said you have one more slot, so you only have 3 slots, or?
Yeah, I think that's the way it is. Or anyway, I remember is that when I went up to 512 to 1 gig, that they said I could do one more, and that's what I.
Yeah, I would see if you can do one, at least one more 512. If not, if a gig is supported in it, because the extra memory is going to help you too. That'll help smooth things out. Interesting. I talked to a friend of mine that happens to work at the Apple store, and we concurred on some technical things. And one issue is, with like what you're trying to do and people that are doing graphics work, creative work, is having the necessity of having a dedicated video card in the computer. So if you're using shared video memory to do the task that you're trying to do, that's also slicing CPU and system memory away. So I just purchased a laptop for my daughter and she's going to be working on graphic stuff, and didn't go the Mac way, Larry. Really wanted to.
I can't believe you didn't.
Couldn't get my wife to move in that direction. But she got a 512K memory, or 512 meg dedicated memory card in a laptop, which is pretty high-end for laptops these days. But anyhow, all those little things make a huge difference when trying to do audio, video work, music work, like what you're trying to do. So if your Belark advisor says you're using shared video memory, then having a dedicated video card is going to make a difference. I can't say a huge difference because, you know, CPU dependent, bus speed, and all that.
Yeah.
You know, you can do all these little things and eventually you might get there, and but I don't know at what expense. So,
yeah. Think Mac the next time around.
Yeah.
And you brought up the issue of purchasing things, of course, and Jessica emailed us and is entering her final year of college and thinking of buying a new laptop, more specifically a netbook. Mm-hmm. They're very affordable and portable, but am I overlooking any downsides? What are the downsides?
Interesting that the companies have identified this area as, you know, a way of them coming out with these small netbooks that are, you know, the screens are, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 inches.
Yeah.
And they put in a gig of memory and solid-state hard drive, or and some of them have hard drives in them, and they're selling them, you know, $250, $300, under $400. In listening to the comments in some of the business shows, some of them are like, I don't know how they get away with selling them because they're slow. And that would be my reaction. You know, what kind of apps you're trying to run on it. If you're just trying to do simple word processing, browsing, and email,
maybe okay.
They may even be disabled a little bit for enjoying, you know, the web stuff, because some of these web apps are getting pretty, yeah. Like Intel, I remember a few years ago said, you know, in order to experience our stuff, you needed a certain CPU. And, you know, unless they've added those things to these lower end units, you may not be able to, you know, experience online
that.
Stuff. So, as an investment, I looked at the MacBooks, you know, the entry level on some of these now is just under $1,000, and the speed and stability of them. I would look at more of an investment, but just make sure you keep your eye on your investment, because someone else might be eyeing it. I'd like to see them come down more in price, but I would be more apt to invest in a laptop that's got 3 or 4 gigs of RAM and a 250, 300 gig hard drive and a 14, 15 inch screen at $400. $400 range than I would in one of the netbooks.
All right. Let's go to Kelly in Madison next. Hi, Kelly.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a question. I have a PC with Windows Vista, and I have a flash card reader that is a USB 2.
Okay.
But whenever I plug it in, I always get that message saying that this device could run faster. It says the device can perform faster. This USB device can perform faster if you connect it to a high-speed USB 2 port. And when I try to download images off of it, it's really slow. But then if I restart the computer with it already plugged in, then it will run as a USB 2 drive. And it, you know, takes like only a few minutes to download a couple gig of.
So it's almost like if you have it in before you start it up, it knows who it is, and if you
right.
put it in after it's on, it's like, hey, you're not who I think you are.
Yeah, and I get that message saying that the device, mm-hmm. you know, isn't plugged into a USB 2 port.
Right. What you may want to do is after you start up the system and then plug the flash drive in
uh-huh.
to that port, check and see if there any new drivers available for it, or if the flash drive, if whoever the manufacturer is, see if there's any device drivers that are, you know, more current for it to
mm-hmm.
update it, and see if that fixes the problem.
Okay.
There might be some syncing problem that it just doesn't know, you know,
yeah.
and it's not current, so it's just operating as a plain USB versus the latest, you know, 2.0.
Thanks for calling, Kelly. I appreciate it. Dale emailed us, and she says, I keep getting a message like in Facebook saying time to update your Internet Explorer to IE8. My daughter said she did this and had no end of problems assessing her getting rid of it and going back. My skills aren't that good to do that. I'm young enough to adore my computer, old enough that I don't qualify as computer literate. Is Firefox better than Internet Explorer? Husband also wants to know, is Firefox faster than Internet Explorer or Google Chrome? Getting very nervous about not upgrading. Apparently, my IE is about to go away.
Okay, a couple of things there. You can, if you click on the icon for the Internet Explorer update, and then if you click on Custom, I believe you can check a box. I forget if it's check or uncheck, where you don't want to be notified of that particular update, so you don't get bugged about it anymore. So that's one option. So I would do that. If she doesn't want to update,
she wants to know, should she update?
I wouldn't.
Yeah,
I would kind of hold off.
Okay,
you know, it's still. Yeah. Don't be one of the first kids on the block.
Right.
Firefox and Chrome. Chrome is going to be the fastest of the three. Firefox has got a lot of support behind it. Works well. I think it's a little bit faster. However, just be aware that with Internet Explorer, in order to do your any kind of Windows system updates, you have to use Internet Explorer to visit Microsoft's Windows Update site, because they use what's called ActiveX to interact with your system to check and see, you know, if you're current or if you need any updates other than Internet Explorer 8. So if there's any security flaws and things like that. So
All right.
You can't, and don't uninstall. My kid did this once, and I just... just don't uninstall Internet Explorer 8. If you don't use it, just leave it alone.
Just leave it there.
It's become an integrated part of the operating system, and to try and remove it is not
good.
Worth the hassle and not good. Because, again, you can't interact with their website and do any kind of updates. So.
Unless you have a father like Peter. Or even that father would probably be awfully mad, too.
Yeah.
Charlie in Monona, it's on to you now. Hi, Charlie.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Good, Larry and Peter. I just went through the very thing your gentleman called first about, I guess, about going from Outlook to a Mac, and I just did that in the last 2 months.
Okay.
And after a bunch of angst and phone calls and trying to figure out how to do it, I discovered a little product at littlemachines.com. It's called O2M. O, the number, 2 and M for Outlook to Mac. And for $10 and 3 or 4 clicks, it transferred all of my Outlook email, contacts, and archive messages.
See, I knew there was something out there.
Yeah. You know, I talked to Apple and said, you know, gee, you know, you would think that you would just kind of automatically have a transfer program that would do this.
Now, why would they want to do that?
Well, I don't know. But they certainly don't.
No.
And so they said, well, you go look around exactly what you told the gentleman. And said, you go look around and see what you can find.
So what would you recommend someone searching on?
Well, I just go to littlemachines.com.
Yeah, but when you found it, what did you do?
Outlook to Mac Mail.
Okay.
And I think that was one of the, if not the very first hit on that search.
Well.
And so I'm sure there's probably others, but this one, the longest time that it took was to run that program on the old data. It would grind along on your old PC and convert those to files that then you copy to a thumb drive or something and drag and drop over onto your Mac and then import them. And
So for $10 you can...
Yeah, for $10 it's a lot easier than sitting on support for half a day. Save yourself the trouble.
Yep.
Oh,
that's great.
Thanks, Charlie.
You bet. Thank you.
Yep. Appreciate the call.
You know, another thing to add to that when you're searching for things is I always tell people read the answers. Even if you don't think it's the right solution, try and figure out how to ask the question better.
Yeah.
Ask the question in a different way, In this case, that's why I asked. I said, how'd you find this? And he said, I'll look to Mac Mail. Yeah. You know, it's a, that's a pretty easy, you know.
Straightforward
search. And he said, you know, within one or two clicks, he came up with it. But some of the solutions out there, you need to read the answers, see how to ask the question better or in a different way.
Let's go to John in New Berlin. John, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hi.
I first got to say, I'm not a father like Peter. So
okay.
And I've been holding off on updating Microsoft's, you know, they usually highlight the new updates coming up.
Right.
And my daughters clicked on it, or they said they clicked on it. And we have a program comes up. It's called Run Once, and where it overrides your whole configuration of where you're, you know, searching your search engines and all that, and you cannot override it, get rid of it. It's been, I've been searching on the internet, and it's been around for like 2 years, and they go through a process of where how to shut that down, but I just can't do it. Have you ever heard of this?
So it's called Run Once.
Run Once. It's a micro. What it does is highlights Microsoft and overwrites everything that you have. All your favorites will be gone, but they're actually rewritten into a, you know, a new files. Hmm. So you have to search for all your favorites.
So are you saying it's a Microsoft message?
No, it's not a message. It rewrites your search engine.
Huh.
So up in your icon, up in the top of your screen, say you want to. We had AT&T, SBC, Yahoo.
Okay.
And now it's all Microsoft.
Okay.
And we cannot put our AT&T back into it. We tried a couple times to put it back in. It will not hold that. It'll just rewrite back to this Run Once program.
Okay. I'm going to take a stab at this. I think it sounds, because I've seen something like that before, I think it's a Microsoft issue. If you go to the Microsoft knowledge base.
Okay.
If you type in Microsoft space knowledge base,
okay,
and go to their, it's part of their TechNet site,
okay,
but it's accessible to the public. You need to click on, you know, if you look at the screens, just make sure you're putting in which operating system you're using, and you know that you have a question. I think probably about Internet Explorer, or you know. It's got to be. They won't list Mozilla or anything like that. And then ask your question in there. They might have a tech paper on how to fix that.
Sure. We went to a couple different sites to get info on it, uh-huh. And it's been out there for 2 years, and Microsoft hasn't corrected the problem at all.
Okay.
Well, it's something new you're gonna have to look at. It's called Run Once.
Okay.
All right. We'll take a look. Always something, isn't
it? Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, that system security thing was a real challenge when you go out there and you find it and people say, hey, do this to remove it, and it doesn't work, the steps. That was a challenge. That was like a five-day challenge.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question about your personal computer, I hope you'll join us as we visit with Peter Green. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Jeff in Eau Claire next. Jeff, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I called once upon a time about how to print a directory listing, and maybe I did call or didn't call, but either way, I figured out how to do it on, I think it was Google Groups, and it entailed having to write some code into the thing, which I don't know how I did it, but I did it, and now it's printing, and it works how I like it. But now maybe I'm asking too much, but what I want to do is I want to save the names of the files into a text file, and not I want to send that to people without sending the files. I just want to send the names of the files. Is there a possible way to do that?
So you're talking about a listing of the file names within a directory?
Yeah.
Wow. How many files are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, I'd say upwards of 500.
Oh. You're not going to do those one at a time.
The only way, is this on a Windows system?
It's on Windows, yes. Okay. Windows XP.
Yeah. If you go into, you might have to do a little bit of research on this, but if you do a directory listing in DOS and then figure out how to output that to dump it to a file, so you can dump stuff to a printer. So what I'm saying is to capture it to a file.
That's what I'd like to do.
Yeah. So you may want to do some searches. You know, maybe there's someone wrote a, you know, utility program to do this, you know, to export a file listing to a file.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's...
It's about...
I mean, what I do... In terms of small quantities, when I want to tell people the actual file names, is I right mouse click on it, click on rename, and it's highlighted, and then I just do a cut and paste. So I actually have the file name. I don't have the extension, but at least I have the name of the file. But in your case, you'd have to do that 500 times. So what I'm trying to get at is to go into the command language of the computer, and then... rather than directing the file listing to the screen, is to actually dump that screen listing to an actual file as the output.
Right.
So you have to do some searches, and there might be some programmers out there that wrote some utilities, you know, to do that, because, you know, maybe as a checklist they needed to have that kind of output.
Mm-hmm.
So your suggestion would be to try to get the right search terms, go to a place like Google Groups, as I had done for how to print the directory listing, and then what would I type in, how to export to a text file?
Export file listing to a text file.
Okay.
You might have better luck. You know, I link to a lot of hardware, software, computer support forums on my Virus Info Center page. So if you go to infostar.com on the left-hand side and you see the Virus Info Center page and click on that, on the very top you'll see forums. And those are all forums that I've pulled out to, you know, help find, you know, technical information. I think I might have listed a search engine on there, and I tried to use Google to optimize a search through those tech sites. So, you know, that you might want to try it that way too. I try to convince Google to do it, but they, you know, they're like, what's the point?
Yeah.
We search the entire web, and I'm like, the relevancy is if you search all of the sites that just have to deal with the issues that you want to search, you're more likely to find the solution that way than searching the entire web, because then the answers get buried.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
There you have it, Jeff. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Andrew in Milwaukee, we now turn to you.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I am working on a document, got it just about laid out now, that's in Windows XP and Microsoft Word, Office 2003. And I don't have Quark Express or InDesign or any publishing software. I've got it laid out pretty nicely, but the printer wants it. If I can't do it in Quark or InDesign, he wants me to give him the the high quality resolution photographs for the images in separately. But mm-hmm. he wants the other stuff in PDF.
Right.
How do I convert from Microsoft Word to PDF? I do have a scanner and Adobe Photo Elements, but what do you think?
There are some programs out there that will convert Word documents to PDFs. So if you did a search for that, I know there's one product called Nitro.
Okay.
That does that, Nitro.
Okay.
And there are others out there. I don't know if the latest version of Word 2007 actually allows for PDF production.
Okay, and I
could do a search on that
anyway. But yeah, go ahead.
You could do a search and see if Word 2007 includes that. I just, you know, I don't remember if they finally decided to play ball or not.
Uh-huh.
But I know if you do a search on converting Word documents to PDF files. There are utilities that are out there. Nitro might not be the least expensive. You might want to go to like a website like CNET.com. They own a site called Downloads.com, and maybe click on the Reviews tab and see if you can find software that, you know, does that and what the reviews are on it, because I'm sure it's been out for a while. It's not like it came out yesterday. It's been out for years.
Yeah.
So, for example, someone a good thing for this would be someone created a Word or a publisher document and wanted to have a PDF file for downloading off of the web. I remember playing with it, and they give you like a 30-day trial where you can experiment with it for free and see how it works and, you know, see if it's adequate enough for what you need.
Yeah.
So
there you go. Thanks a lot, Andrew, for calling. Appreciate your call as well.
I can tell you from experience in working with printers and publishers that it's important to communicate with the printer that's going to publish, print and publish your work. You know, what are the settings that they really need in terms of output? Because it's not just a simple get them a PDF file. It might be they need crop marks or bleeds because, you know, you've done certain things to your document. So, you know, I happen to work with like four color large documents, and I went through this, and the printers are usually have technical people that are very anxious to help you because they want to get it right too. They don't want to spend a lot of wasted time getting the output file from you that they really need, because then they're going back to you and saying, hey, you know, we need it this way. So, you know, make the call and say, what do you really need? What are my settings? What should that output look like when you get the file? You know, what do you want in it? You know, it'll save you a lot of time if you make the call and talk to the actual tech people there.
All right. Jim in Green Bay, on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I would like to know how I would go about setting up a filter so that children can't access an appropriate site.
There's settings within the browsers that allow you to, you know, limit the kind of content, and you can also input, you know, lists of sites that you want blocked so that they're not accessed. You can also get routers where, you know, the device that you hook up a cable modem or DSL modem to that allows you to put security controls in there. You can also buy software that allows you to filter the content as well. I remember CyberNanny is one, and there's a number of them out there that you, again, you know, going to like a CNET.com website and clicking on reviews and doing a search on, you know, parental control software. I know they've rated them because that stuff's been out for probably eight or so years. But you can go into the browsers and individually tailor them. But to try and keep up with this, you can't even say scores of websites.
No.
I mean, it's, you know, probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds or whatever. You know, so you may want to look into some of those programs that cater to that.
Mm-hmm. Buying some software is probably the way to go.
Well, like I said, do the research first. Don't, you know, here's the other thing. You know, when you go to a store, okay, I'm not downgrading going to a store and buying software, but when you're looking at buying software like what we're talking about, the stuff that's on the shelf is already old. It's old the day they print it, and it takes them, you know, 60 days prior to production to get that product on the shelf. Versus when you go online, you do your due diligence, you do your research, see which ones work well. ePinions is another site that may have some discussion. Do some general searches of with Google, whatever your search engine is, and, you know, see how other people feel about it. Even go to some of the forums and news groups, see what other people are doing, and you might find a variety of solutions that you might want to consider implementing. So not only software, but being active in certain groups that discuss it and tell you what what is lurking out there, you know, every day, where you get, you know, people giving you constant feedback, and they may say, hey, there's this, you know, router that's got this stuff built in that automatically, you know, tags onto and gets updates from this product. So there might be some optimized solutions out there for you to look at that would save you a lot of time and headaches. Yeah. So, you know, don't just, you know, now go to the store and say, this is
first
what I'm,
one. Yeah.
You know, oh, there's Cyber Nanny. I'm not endorsing Cyber Nanny. I'm not endorsing any product. I'm saying, you know, that's how you find the best solution for what you're looking for. And I know the new routers out there have a lot of features in them, and some of them are for putting in blocked web addresses. So
there you have it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your personal computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Thanks for listening in, and please join in with your questions and comments. All our lines are filled right now. And Pete, you always come up with a list, a top 10 list.
Oh, yeah,
computer sites.
I almost forgot about that. I got to find my my list here.
Oh. There you go.
All right, and glasses because I'm over 50 now, right? last month we had someone call in and made a suggestion about this particular website. It's called malwarebytes.org, and just like it sounds, malware and then bytes.org. It's another website dedicated to fighting, you know, spyware, what they call malware. So there's a utility there. This website is maintained by a Microsoft Most Valuable Professional for tweaks and tips for all the Windows versions, 95 through Vista, and probably 7 when it's released. And the website's called DougKnox.com. This next one is for the new community rules, Larry.
Yeah.
It's called TweetDeck, TweetDeck.com, and it's actually in beta, and there's an iPhone app also available for it, but Packer players and coaches, I hope you're not listening. It's a personal browser for staying in touch with what's happening now, connecting you with your contacts across Twitter, Facebook, and more. So TweetDeck. Next one is a how-to manual that you can edit. It's a collaborative writing project to build the world's largest, highest quality how-to manual, and it's called WikiHow, WikiHow.com, and currently it contains over 58,000 articles written and edited by volunteers. This next one is a Windows System Administration website that's maintained by the main IT person for the largest university library in Munich, Germany, and it's called the number 4, mm-hmm. and then SysOps, SysOps.com. So tap into that resource if you're a Windows administrator. This next number 6 is a resource dedicated to relentless search for all things technical. Is related to emerging consumer-based technology and gadgets, and it's called Slippery Brick.
Okay.
Slipperybrick.com. This next one for Apple fans is called the Unofficial Apple Weblog, TUAW.com. It's a source of tips, reviews, news, analysis, and opinion on everything Apple, and it's been up since 2004. The number 8 on the list is called Uneasy Silence. So UNEASY silence.com. Their goal is to deliver a daily coverage of offbeat and generally geeky news. And number 9, you know, if you can make money doing something like this, more power to you. The web is a vast resource out there. It's called InfoPirate.org. Interesting name, infopirate.org. It's a website that says sharing bookmarks is a way to make money. So You can go to that link and see what you think about it. And number 10 is howtodothings.com. And it's a resource that strives to solve people's everyday problems by compiling reliable information from experienced contributors and making it available to inexperienced readers. So it's a community sharing project for sharing expertise to solve people's problems.
And all those are available. If you didn't get those down, go to infostar.com and you'll find that whole list right there.
Yep, it's right there. And the archives up there, I don't know if it's like 8 or 9 years of archives, but it's a lot.
Still up there. Mary in Oshkosh, we go to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. I run XP Professional. I think I'm at Service Pack 3, and I think that came over 6 months ago, and I think that's when this problem started. I use Outlook Express for my email, and I think about the time Service Pack 3 came on, maybe it's just a coincidence, but I started getting the you need to compact your message, your folders message all the time. Even after compacting, I'd go back into Windows Express, and the next time I exited, that message would be there. I did some searching on the internet and found out that in the registry editor, the compact check count was not being set to zero, and it gave me instructions for setting that to zero, which I did, and voila, it stopped the message from coming up. But not as infrequently as I had hoped. And it seems now that the number that sets off this message to compact your files is 100. And it's something out there seems to be setting this up, the number up to 100, much faster than what seems reasonable to me, that I still end up getting it's time to compact your files several times a week. And I'm wondering if you've heard of something out there that goes and updates this registry editor besides Windows Express or Outlook Express, or if there, what is it in Outlook Express that causes this number to increment?
So how many files do you have or folders do you have in Outlook Express?
Oh, you're going to embarrass myself.
No.
I've got tons. I'm a terrible housekeeper when it comes to my email. Lots.
Yeah. Do you have them organized in folders, too?
I do have folders. What I end up doing is that at the end of the year, I take all the emails that I managed not to delete out of my inbox, and I put it into last year's file.
Right.
And
okay.
Then I delete a file from the, you know, I've got about maybe 3 years' worth of emails archived up there.
There might be a threshold limit on Outlook Express, and that's why you're continually being, you know, annoyed with, you know, compacting the folders. There's one, I don't know if you've been to this website, InsideOE.com.
No.
That's a website that's been up there for years. It used to be called Tomsterdam, but now it's InsideOE.com. That's a good resource for Outlook Express. Have you scanned or done searches on Microsoft's knowledge base?
Yes, they tell me about the issue of the compact check count not being reset when it gets to when you do compact your messages.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the places where I got the information about how to go in, and also on tech forums.
Uh-huh.
I found the information about how to go into the registry editor,
right,
and find this place and clear it out. It's not just my problem. Lots of people have come up with this problem where the message just comes back even after you compact
right.
your files.
Mm.
But what I'm really surprised at, and I have no problem with doing the compact process, but it just surprises me that it comes back
right.
So frequently.
Now, have you ever moved your Outlook Express folder? In other words, are you just, you know, you would know how to do this if you've ever done it. Have you ever moved it so that your Outlook Express data files are located in a different place?
No, I have never done that.
Okay. I'm just wondering if, it sounds like it sounds dangerous,
mm-hmm.
but I have a separate folder for my Outlook Express mail. So it's in a folder all by itself called Outlook Express, and then within that are all the mailboxes,
uh-huh,
or the inbox and whatever.
So you keep it separate from the application.
So I keep it separate, and it's not located buried down within the tree structure of the hard drive. It's right there, right off of the root drive.
Uh-huh.
And I've never, occasionally, it asks me to compact my folders, but I never get, you know, bothered by constant messages to do that.
And like I say, I think I saw some information that this may have started with Service Pack 3, and I thought I saw something somewhere which implied that some other application may go out there and update the compact check count.
Hmm.
But I have very little.
Service Pack 3 has actually been out for quite a while, and I have it on the system, and I don't have any problems with it. Someone said, why do you still use Outlook Express? And to be honest with you, because a lot of people use it, and, you know,
What would you recommend as an alternative? I'd love to get rid of it.
Well, you can, I mean, Outlook is an alternative where you can import messages into that, and then there's a new version of Microsoft Mail that you can also use. It's part of their product they support, and you don't have to be a Vista user to use it. But when you move when you create a folder and then you move your messages, what happens is you go into Outlook Express, and I believe it's under maintenance, and then there's this area where you can check on it to move your storage folders for Outlook Express.
Mm-hmm.
And you give it the new location.
Yeah.
And then what it does is when you close out of Outlook Express, it moves everything from its old location to the new location.
Uh-huh.
And then when you start up, all the folders are located there.
Oh, so that's how I would put it in the root.
That's how, yeah. So if you gave, if you named a folder, you know, Outlook Express or OE, you know, mail, and then... Right on C. Then it would move everything to that location. Like I said, I have a lot of folders.
Yeah.
I have a lot of messages just like what you've described, and I don't get asked about, you know, compacting my folders. So
give that a try, and thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And an email from Dave, after reinstalling Windows XP due to a computer crash, I lost the ability to burn CDs using Windows Media Player. Has the software been wiped out, or can it be a simple settings problem? I want to continue using the WMP due to its user-friendly format. No bells and whistles. I don't need those.
Yeah. If you do a reinstall with XP, you probably you should look at the manufacturer of the player. And make sure that you've got the most current versions, because you're going to have to make sure that's updated. The system may say it looks like it works, but you know, using something like Blark Advisor and then seeing if everything, you know, knowing what is in your system, and then going specifically to the company's website and downloading all those device drivers. You know, like HP is real good about posting that. Dell is really good about posting that, where it tells you the date and time, or the date,
right,
when those became available or updated, so you can fix that.
Janet emailed us and said, help, I bought an old IBM ThinkPad with Windows 98 and wireless cards. Can't figure out how to activate Internet access. Tried plugging in my RR modem into the laptop and no results. Also tried going to Wi-Fi spot to use wireless cards. It did not recognize the signal. Any advice there?
Well, with any device that's attached to the computer, like what we just talked about with DVDs, or if it's a wireless card, is making sure you have the most current device driver for that. And then if you're trying to attach to a Wi-Fi, you got to confirm that the card itself is working. So if it looks like it's installed and looks like you got all the latest device drivers for it, you should be able to work. So It might be simple as just making sure you're current. You know, if you've bought something used and it's a Windows 98 that's fairly old, Microsoft doesn't support Windows 98 anymore, but you may be able to find the device drivers out there for that particular card and, you know, install it and make sure it's current. The other thing is accepting things at face value that the actual card, even though it looks like it's acknowledged by the system, does work properly, because it may not.
We had 8 or 10 emails here about the directory printing issue, and I think there's 8 or 10 different ways suggested here. One, I would just mention, Jack emailed us and said he uses a utility called Tree Size Pro that provides the function. So it's a Tree Size Pro is one of the...
Like I said, there's probably somebody out there that wrote something like that because they needed to do that when they were probably migrating a system.
So there's a whole batch.
Yep.
Let's go to Bryce in Fremont, who has a question for you. Bryce, hi.
Yes, good afternoon there,
hi.
Peter. And my question goes back to Firefox again. I missed the first part of the session. So anyway, my problem is that Firefox has crashed. I have submitted crash reports, which I have one in front of me right here. I cannot open Firefox in safe mode. I have searched for the particular file, DLL file, that it identified. My computer can't find it.
Okay.
Twice I have talked with volunteers from Firefox on their live chat. I have downloaded, probably 3 different software and purchased a little bit of software. Nothing can find this particular file. And so I'm kind of at a loss about how to delete this one particular file that caused the Firefox to crash so I can reuse it, because I'd prefer not to use Internet Explorer because of all the problems they have had. But
so you said you've identified a file that's causing the crash?
Yes.
Okay. And
according to the crash report.
Okay, and you can't delete it?
I can't find it. The computer says it doesn't exist.
It might be... might actually be hidden.
It's hidden, and the last thing that the Firefox volunteers sent me to, and then they both, there were 2 of them that were trying to help me at the time, and they both kind of ended the conversation and got out, so I was kind of left hanging. But they sent me to some website about rootkit, something in there, and it didn't seem to be able to find it, but I was asking questions when they both got out of the systems.
Yeah, there's actually a setting. You're using Windows?
Yes.
There's actually a setting in Windows that allows you to show all files on your system, including hidden files and system files.
Well, when I did a search, it did say that all files, it was, and even the hidden files, it was checked, so it looked like it was searching for all of them.
But was that feature enabled, though? In other words, you have to make sure, even though you're saying search through hidden files, there's an actual box that says to actually see those files. It's not to search them, but it's actually
to
see them.
Oh, to see them.
Yeah.
I don't think
you should, in Windows Explorer, there's a setting. I don't know specifically where it is. If I had a computer in front of me, I'd be doing that. But it's in Windows Explorer, and it might be under, like, file types, and there's a box there. So you need to make it to expose all system and hidden files.
Would this be in the search feature then, when I go down to the start button?
I don't think, no, it's in Windows Explorer. Windows Explorer is typically I disagree with how Microsoft sends their systems out from the factory. Windows Explorer needs to be on the desktop. Windows Explorer allows you to manage your system. Why are you bearing it to your users?
Yeah.
It should be at your fingertips. It's one of the first things I move, create a shortcut for, is to put Windows Explorer on the desktop. It should be right there with Recycle Bin, because it's like, how do you manage your system? I use Windows Explorer to, do things with the files, though. Anyhow, if you click on Start and click on Accessories, You should see Windows Explorer listed there. If you right mouse click on it, if you drag it to your desktop and say create shortcut, you know, it'll do it for you.
Okay.
But anyhow, it's in Windows Explorer where you should expose the system files and all hidden files. And the other thing is if you click on start, then click on run and type in CMD and go into DOS, did anyone have you go into the command line to do a search?
No.
Because if you do, after you go into the command prompt, so you click on start, click on run, type in CMD, click on enter, and then type in CD backslash, so you go to the root directory, so now you're at the very top of your hard drive, and I'm assuming you don't have any other hard drives in your system, you would type in DIR space, and then if you know what this file is called, maybe key in the first three letters of the file name, then a star or asterisk, which is the 8 key, so shift 8 key, then a period, and then another star, and then space, and then forward slash, and the letter S for searching all subfolders, and then enter. It'll go through and search your entire hard drive for any file that starts with the first three letters and whatever extension it is. The other thing you could add to that line after the forward slash S is another space. And then if you're ever wondering why they have the symbol there, it's called the pipe symbol. And I believe it's above the enter key to the right, but it's the two hashes that are on top of each other. So the vertical hashes.
Yeah.
It's called the pipe symbol. And then type in the word more right after it. And what that'll do is just stop your screen from scrolling crazily. If there are a whole bunch of files by that name, it'll allow you to do, you know, page by page.
There you have it. So. Wow. That's a lot to remember.
So you can do the search on your system through Windows, or you could do it through the command line, you know, and search for it that way.
All right.
That doesn't care if it's hidden. I don't think that cares if it's hidden.
Well, we unfortunately have a whole raft here. I'm almost drowning in emails, and all our lines are still filled. We're out of time, Peter.
And I don't Twitter yet, and I don't know if I ever want to. Oh, my God, what would I unleash?
Tell you what, if you go to our we're a little discussion, which Peter and I didn't have a chance to talk about today, but hope you will, in our community of listeners, go to WPR.org. And join our online community of listeners and make a comment. We're talking about, raise the issue about Microsoft and Yahoo, their partnership agreement. What's your take on that merger? I'd be interested in hearing what you have to say about that. And you can do that by simply joining our online community of listeners. There's a bunch of other topics, too, several topics that we're always looking for comments on as well. So please go ahead and do that. Well, we have Peter, by the way, coming back on September 1st, Tuesday. So that's my daughter's birthday.
That's so right.
That's my daughter's birthday, September 1st.
I have to bring in a present that day. Otherwise, you might not let me in the door.
Just bring in your usual good knowledge here. Tomorrow, just to let you know, tomorrow we've got Bird Songs and Calls, John Fife of Madison, Steve Bechtol of Eau Claire join us. Thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.